the grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Welcome to the Grey Cricketer Podcast. It's a huge show because Pete Hanscom is on the show. We're talking Australia, Pakistan, Australia, Sri Lanka, New Zealand, England, India, Bangladesh, Shakib El Hassan's ban, and the WBBL. A shout out to Budgie Smuggler, who are long-term supporters of the show and basically give us money to say whatever we want. So please go and buy loads and loads and loads of their smugglers and smuglets and use the code CHAMP this November at checkout for free shipping. My name is Ian Higgins. I'm joined by Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. And boys, Australia-Pakistan was a washout. Australia-Sri Lanka, just about a washout as well. Not a whole lot of cricket going on.
Yeah, it feels like a long run-up to the tests this summer. It feels like a lot of contextless cricket.
Exactly.
This summer. I have a contrarian view on this. I think that's okay. Like, do we need context all the time? In fact, you need some contextlessness for context to actually take place. So I'm okay with it. It's just a summer of contextless cricket where people score heaps of hundreds, hopefully, and create narratives. And stuff happens in a vacuum, so there'll be some crisis, and then we can talk.
I mean, does anyone go to a T20 match for context? Like, I'm in your kind of camp in that I enjoy contextless cricket. I mean, don't make me think about this shit. Like, I want T20 cricket to be like Netflix for me. I just want to sit down on a couch and, you know, scroll through T20 or content or watch a thriller or watch the OJ documentary or whatever it is over two glasses of wine. Just let it wash over me. That's what T20 cricket is to me.
But do you want to, like, what if it's a thriller? Like, if Australia ends up getting a result against Pakistan and they win, like, do you want to binge watch the next episode of Australia versus Pakistan?
I want that Netflix feature where it just auto rolls into the next episode. But it's just another play. T20.
Maybe.
And that's basically CA's schedule anyway.
Well, they will get subsumed into Netflix eventually.
I basically, like, you know how Netflix sometimes asks you, are you still watching? Cricket also does that as well, just like, are you still watching?
Yeah.
Still
doing this? It's a darker question.
It's a darker question, yeah. And you can see the reflection in yourself and the television and you're crying. So that Pakistan game, well, the biggest takeaway just in the rules of gentry and cricket is that, like, we lost 80 minutes of play. Yeah. Innings break, still take 20 minutes for the break.
Of course.
Yeah, because you have a break now.
Yeah. On that, like, so that's the match referee who makes that decision, isn't it?
Javagal Srinath.
Yeah.
So Javagal Srinath, one of the great quicks.
Just these ones.
What else does the match referee do besides that? Like, what's his paycheck? What's justifying his paycheck?
I don't know.
I don't know what a match official does, but, like, matches seem
ensure
to
ensure that a match takes place, I think.
Issues a few fines here and there, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, slow over rate, might make a determination on that. Have a chat to the captains occasionally.
It's a fucking cushy job by the sounds of it.
It's a good job, isn't it?
How do you get into that?
It's a good job. It just reminded me, like, sometimes when I come around to my parents' place and then we'll be hanging out for a bit and then, like, my mum will say, should we have lunch now?
Yeah.
It's just like cricket reminds me of that. Yeah. It's just like we now have a designated break. We take it for this amount of time and then we resume the social activity of the sport. It's like, just fucking get out there and hit him. Like, we've just been sitting down for like an hour and fucking a half.
And also,
but the break is good, though. It's good to have a, you know.
It's nice to have a rest.
Like, can I just have a bit of rest?
Jeez, it was warm yesterday.
But fuck me, that the game was abandoned pretty quick.
Yeah.
Like, it rained for like 10 seconds in Sydney yesterday.
Yeah.
And then, like, the rest of the evening, they could have played if they hung around. They were fucking keen to go home last night.
Yeah.
And also,
well, it's Sunday night.
Why was it on at that weird time again? Like, can they just play the games at the same time? I'm a fucking time poor parent.
Mm-hmm.
I want the games to always be on at the same time. Every fucking night.
Yeah,
why
consistency.
Not?
Consistency is key. They played that Sri Lanka game at the Gabba on a Wednesday night and 6,000 people turned up. And they basically came to the assumption that, like, no one watches cricket during school holidays at nighttime.
Right.
So, like, if it's a school night, which I guess Sunday night kind of is, then people can't possibly leave the house. Well, this seems exclusively Australian.
We're not living in like outlaws for this Singaporean education system where kids are locked, you know, in their rooms for 8 hours after school to do their homework diligently.
Yeah.
Like, kids get out and about. They can go to a game of cricket.
You're
should they desire?
To. Yeah.
It was a shame that they just on the match being abandoned. Like, a lot of people are musing on the fact that Australia faced 3.1 overs. There was only 11 more balls needed to make it a contest. And I kind of, it would have been quite good for it to, like, they had 10 minutes to bowl 11 balls, which would have been really close. I think, which is weird to think that like, it takes a ball, like a ball takes a minute, but I reckon there would have been some incredible shithousery from Pakistan in that final over. I would like to have seen that. Like, I want to see, you know, like obviously captaincy chats with the bowler. I want to see miss, like I want to see field changes. Yeah. I want to see someone throw the ball to mid off who deliberately, like comically misses it and has to go to the boundary to go get it, shoelaces, all that sort of stuff. I reckon Pakistan have some really good levels on that too.
100%. I just in the opposite way. I remember watching an England under 19s game on Sky. This is probably 10 years ago, back when I was living there. And the England captain at mid off dropped a catch on purpose because he didn't want to take a wicket because they wanted to get the overs in because they were so far ahead of Duckworth Lewis. he like caught it and then just like placed it on the ground, picked it up, threw it back to the bowler, but they had like two balls left. And it's like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That is brilliant.
Cricket
more
needs
of that.
More of that. Cricket needs not more like of it. It's like in rugby league when there's like a really slow play the ball and it just becomes really comical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get up like, oh, I've got a cramp.
A lot of likes cramping in the 79th minute. Yeah.
There's more cramping in cricket.
Well, one of the big takeaways, obviously, is the unleashing of Mohammad Irfan from the the Pakistan side. He's 7'1".
Awesome.
That is unbelievably tall for any human being, and let alone a professional athlete. Just like watching that 7'1" run in. How do they do it in the NBA?
I don't know. Well, they take like five steps and they're all the way down the court in the NBA.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a travel, but they let them do it.
Yeah. But like, fuck, bowlers are getting frighteningly big, aren't they?
Mm.
Like Harold Larwood famously was only like 5'7" or something.
Mm-hmm.
And now this bloke is, what'd you say?
7'1".
Yeah.
Which I think, I only know it in centimetres. He's 216 centimetres tall.
Mm. He'll dunk on you.
Oh, yeah. But he also, like, there's so much to his aesthetic. Like, he's obviously a fucking, he's like, you know, if Aladdin had sex with Robert Wardlow. You're growing up and you're reading the Guinness Book of Records, the tallest man, Robert Wardlow.
Yeah.
Imagine him just, you know, an Aladdin, the flowing magical hair of Aladdin.
Good hair,
which
good
he
salad.
Has. He's got a great salad.
Good salad.
Let's
good
give
salad.
It to him.
Yep.
That is what he is to me.
Mm. That's a compliment.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, geez, he didn't bowl well. Finch actually took in the piece. It's hard to dissect this game because, you know, it was hardly a game, was it? But like, you know, Mohammad Amir back on Australians, like one of the bad things is like he's such a wonderful bowler.
Yeah.
And he is not playing Test cricket anymore. He's just going to go in the T20 circuit, which, you know, fair play, I guess. Mm. But that's a shame. Australia-Sri Lanka series, I suppose, is the next thing to talk about. Absolute demolition. This continues the contextless cricket theme. We'll talk about New Zealand-England next, which is seems even less relevant given that their Test matches afterwards don't even count towards the Test Championship. But Australia-Sri Lanka, we smashed them. Hardly anyone had a hit. Alex Carey didn't bat once in the entire series. Warner didn't get out. Any other takeaways?
I mean, look, my takeaway is that there is no takeaway from this. Like, we cannot take anything away from this because it represented nothing. It was a little taste tester to get us into the summer, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think this series was. It was meaningless. We're talking about contextless cricket.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bit... Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like when you get a little taste, like a starter plate at a really expensive restaurant, just to kind of open the taste buds and whet the appetite. But it's underwhelming.
It was still... I don't know about you, but... I still checked the CA app on the day just to see if the game was on. I still feel a little flutter of excitement. Oh, well, the cricket's on tonight. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Cricket is increasingly becoming a little bit contextless. It just washes over you. Think that's okay? Like, it was pretty contextless when Australia was incredibly good at cricket.
I guess
you
so.
You know, like teams would come out every series. There was no... I can't remember there being, like, any kind of huge showdowns apart from maybe when Australia went to India. Otherwise, it was just a procession and we're there just watching the exhibition. They were all greats. Or whatever. Like, I think cricket sometimes can be contextless and it's okay. Like, you can be overwhelmed with context at times to the point where it actually becomes meaningless.
Well, they're really trying to drive that with T20, aren't they? It's this newly cerebral form of the game that requires strategy.
Mm.
And I don't like to think of T20 and strategy in the same sentence. Mm. Like, they should be as far away in the sentence as possible for mine.
Mm-hmm.
Just those two words.
Just whack 'em. Just YouTube.
Just whack 'em.
It's just whack 'em. It's just cheerleaders. It's R&B music. Mm-hmm. It's IPL season one. That's what T20 is to me, and I want it to remain that way.
But don't you see T20 is like possibly going down that like American baseball style of like just being overrun by super nerds who like have like Moneyball theory? theories and stuff that you will never understand, and that's all said in italics. Like, and I find that comical, which is good. Like, I think one thing, one takeaway from Australia Sri Lanka was that it was like, I think we mentioned this last week, but it was like very, it was a very classically Australian kind of demolition job. It was all like muscular batting. It was pace on bowling. And, you know, all the, you know, people coming out going, well, you know, that's not actually how T20 is played. But like, we are like just ensconced in our Australian bubble, fading light, few bumpers, guys getting injured, you know, doing fun things with the bat. And, you know, life's happy in the corner of this world.
Yeah, but isn't that the thing, Pez? Because, like, let's say the Great Australian Team of 15 years ago, which was the name of the team, the Great Australian Team. And like, that team, it was good to watch in that contextless cricket form because we could just watch how much better they were than anyone. Yeah. Like that's a Hall of Fame team. But now it's the same. It's the players doing exactly the same thing, but they're not as good as that team was. So it's just like, well, no one can play away from home anymore. So we just smash them, even though we're not playing like the...
Feels to me like T20 shouldn't be played by nation states. Like, this should just be
a club sport.
It's a club sport, a world club challenge. That's what I would like to see T20 be.
Because they tried that, didn't they? They tried the world club championships. New South Wales won the first one, actually, like Smith and Warner in it when they went to India.
It's franchises. It's fucking billion-dollar owners. There's money floating around everywhere. There's cheerleaders, as I mentioned before. Yep. Male and female.
Yeah. I like the idea. I like the idea of it getting to, like, a UEFA Champions League football sense where, like, teams travelling, like, you know, away, but I get
yeah. Imagine like bringing New South Wales, yeah, you know the famed European clubs going over the river to travel to see their team play in Germany. But imagine that
away days.
Yeah,
could that happen in cricket?
Well, as I say, they tried to do it, but they did it in India. So maybe it's like I've said this many times. I find
infrastructure's terrible there.
I find it just hard to watch the cricket in India. I don't know what it is.
And hello to our Indian radio listeners.
This show is literally on Indian radio, yeah. Mm. But I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's just maybe it's a time thing. Mm. I don't know.
Well, anyway, I think one of the themes of the Australian T20 stuff in the realm of strategy is, yeah, we're still like super old school in the thinking. It'll be interesting to see if we like will embrace, especially with Andrew McDonald being named the assistant coach now. You know, are we going to embrace a little bit more, a cleverer approach? You know, are we going to feed through the system those guys who bowl in long sleeve shirts who might look like they chuck it a little bit or whatever? You know, can pace off be something that takes off in Australian cricket?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Not at all. Chest, thoroughbreds,
it's hard
levers.
It's hard to know because we just have not taken the three of us have not taken T20 cricket seriously at all.
No.
To the point where Steve Smith hasn't played, well, before this summer, hadn't played in 3.5 years. Obviously, there's a ban in there in the middle, but hadn't played 3.5 years, still on the team. Is he one of the best batsmen in a T20 side? I don't know. I literally don't know the answer to that.
T20 cricket, it should be just like, you know, Hong Kong sevens. It should just be held in, you know, places like Hong Kong or, you know, interesting tropical locations over a weekend and just, you know, exclusively for the entertainment of corporates.
Isn't the same at the same point, like, there's the fickleness of T20. Like, Australia have never taken it seriously. If they had won this series against Pakistan 3-0, they would have been the number one T20 team in the world. Like, how is that possible?
Yeah.
Babar Azam is the number one.
So there was contact.
Batsman in the world. Mm. Like, how? Like, he's a good player. Yeah. But, like, surely there are, you know.
He's a good player.
He's a good player.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a good player.
He's a good player. Get him on the show.
Good little player.
Wax him.
Yeah. Always diminish it. Oh, he's a good little player.
Right hog.
Yeah. Very Mark War. Warner, not dismissed. 217 runs for the series.
Right.
Nice. Expected. Probably expected, right? Expected?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Good. it's nice to see Warner whack him a little bit. Yeah. It's how we kicked off, you know. Like, things are, I think it's more a sign that, like, things are just starting to return to some sort of normality in Australian cricket. I mean, Warner commenced his career against Steyn and the other, you know, Morkel, et cetera, on that T20 night 10 years ago in Melbourne. We didn't know who he was, and here he is again doing it 10 years later. It just, I think Australian cricket, this is what we're talking about, the contextual stuff. Like, we could just use, it's been industrial crises, it's been cultural crises, you know, administrative crises everywhere, on-field crises. Like, let's just get some normality back. I don't mind Warner whacking them into Adelaide Oval stands for a little bit of time. It just let me settle. Let me meditate. I think a lot of people feel this way.
And it is a tumultuous time, as we've said many times in this podcast. It is good to see Warner doing that. I mean, imagine if Warner did, in those three games, just come in and nick off first ball every time. We would be having a real crisis on our hands.
That's
here.
Right.
A real crisis.
Didn't you always get excited when, like, the first ODI of the summer used to happen in, like, the 90s, 2000s? And you used to be excited by the, like, say, the Australian team kit for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, what number was Stuart Law going to wear?
Yeah.
You know? 10.
Yeah. Always 10.
Yeah. Yeah, we just missed that. I missed the branding of that.
Yeah.
I wish I got to choose my number for cricket. I never was around long enough to get my own number.
What would you
never
have gone for?
Probably something that was relevant in a different code that I liked.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So either probably number 10, fly half in rugby, yeah. Number 6, 5'8", I was both of those things.
Yeah.
Maybe 23 as an homage to Jordan, although that would have been taken very quickly.
Yeah. Mm. By Michael Clarke and Shane Warne. Yeah. Pez? Mm.
Something similar, yeah. Just something that represents another code. So I've got 7. Nothing to add. Yeah,
Beckham.
7.
Beckham,
just,
7.
I just want to ask for play halfback, yeah. League. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything that's playmaker or where you're the main narcissistic personality.
I remember Mark Taylor had 1. And I thought that's really sending a statement out there.
Yeah.
I'm 1.
Yeah. He's just thinking it in, yeah, this linear, I am the big dog, yeah. Number 1. Yeah.
I bat number 1, I am captain, I am 1. Yeah.
Nasser Hussain had 3. I bat 3 for England. 3.
Yeah.
Cameron Akmal had 23 as well. It's a good player. Sorry.
One thing, a serious thing came out, it was the Glenn Maxwell thing. He just, you know, destroyed the opponents. And then, he's taken a break for mental health.
Yep.
Probably a good chance for us to say we meditate on a lot of mental health issues in cricket and satirise it in humour. You know, use a lot of humour or get confused by it a little bit. But, you know, there is support out there. You should seek support if you need a hand, if you're struggling. And it's good that Glenn Maxwell did that as well.
Obviously been on the show a couple of times, once or twice. So we obviously wish him the absolute best in his recovery. New Zealand and England, they've already played two T20s over there. It's one apiece in the series. You know, as I said before, in terms of contextless cricket, this feels very similar. England are trying out new things. New Zealand are missing their best player. Probably the most interesting thing that happened was in the last T20. New Zealand got 176, England all out 155. James Vince dropped 3 catches and then walked out to bat wearing the wrong gloves. So things are going well for James over there. What a nice cover drive.
Hell of a cover drive. Yeah.
Scored some runs in the first T20.
He'd play 100 tests in Australia.
Yep.
Off the back of that cover drive.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. A fucking 100 tests.
Where will you bat him? 5?
Wherever he wants. I actually have to issue an apology. Last week I stated that when we were trying to work out who Chris Silverwood was, I was like, oh, I think he's got a southernish accent. He's from deep north of England, of Yorkshire. So just to
which does make his accent confusing.
Yeah. It's like super confusing.
Yeah.
Apologies to the many who got in touch and said you were incorrect. But that's okay, because you know when you make a mistake, when you're a bit public facing, you're going to hear from it.
So nothing else. That second T20, there was about 14 people there. It was at the Cape Tin. And it kind of reminded me that, like, even the SCG on a Sunday, Sydney, most popular city in Australia, like, no one's really at that game. Like, when does the summer start? When does cricket start in the summer of the Southern Nations?
I think we've obviously got the Melbourne Cup tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that commences the start of the silly season, as we call it in Australia.
That's a good
point.
Which
is kind of coming towards the end of your working year, the calendar year at work. Mm-hmm. And people are just starting to, you know, drift into, you know, early knockoffs, mm-hmm. beers from 3 p.m. at the pub.
Mm. Corporate shorts start to make an appearance in a very jarring way.
Yeah. You know, people start talking about Christmas parties, mm-hmm. maybe outdoor lawn bowls kind of events. Mm-hmm. That people have knocked off emotionally mm-hmm. from their jobs. And that's when cricket jumps in and seizes the moment. So mm-hmm. I think probably mid-November after the cup washes over all of us. Mm-hmm. Game of responsibility, of course, but that, I think, will be when cricket comes into its own. But I'm not ready yet.
Mm. Yeah, it's part of all...
As I speak on the third installment of our podcast, which we're monetizing via ads.
Hello, India. I'm joking this makes up for the New Zealand beating England in one T20. It makes up for the World Cup semi-final loss.
Would have thought so.
Straight swap.
Well, that reminds me, actually, had a friend of the show write in, Bhupraj Singh. He says, hey, lads, on the scale of Omega to Alpha AF, how alpha is Faf de Klerk yarning to Prince Harry in his Safa budgie smugglers after smashing the Poms in the Rugby World Cup 2019 final? Is this the level of alpha we should all be looking to achieve in our lives? You guys seen the photo I'm talking about?
Yeah. I guess so.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say.
Well, winning the World Cup, like one of the most important Commonwealth sports, rugby, winning that over England, the arch nemesis, and then wearing Speedos, barely concealing your private parts whilst shaking hands with Prince Harry on television. Yeah, so I guess it's up there.
I think there were budgie smugglers as well, actually. All right, India versus Bangladesh. They've had one T20. Bangladesh actually beat them, and they beat them without Shakib Al Hassan, because the big story there is obviously he's been banned for 2 years, 1 year suspended for not reporting an approach from a bookmaker. The ICC said in its statement that the player did not report two approaches he received during a tri-series involving Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and Zimbabwe in January 2018, and one more over a 2018 Indian Premier League match between Hyderabad and Kings 11. Shakib will be free to resume playing international cricket on October 29, meaning he will almost certainly miss the T20 World Cup in Australia, which is between October and November next year. So he'd actually just recently led a strike for Bangladesh players to receive more pay. Not going to pay anymore. Michael Vaughan came out on Twitter, obviously, and said, not harsh enough.
Mm.
Bookmakers literally came to him and said, fix these games.
Yeah.
Didn't report it. Thoughts?
A couple of like quotes coming through, like the fixer in question texting him going like, bro, anything doing in the IPL?
Anything
like,
doing?
Oh, look, I've only spoken to him twice. It's like the guy's calling him bro, and anything going on?
Sending him marketing messages.
Yeah, I liked, you don't like any of it really, but like apparently a lot of these transactions are happening via greenbacks and Bitcoin. It's just the infiltration of Bitcoin into cricket. I mean, you know, there's a silver lining. It's good to see cricket, you know, innovating at least on that front.
Yeah.
I saw a tweet from Shakib last night promoting, I think, a new product from Huawei.
Bitcoin.
Huawei, so at least he's still taking some of that sweet Chinese telco cash.
Yeah,
like, they haven't, relinquished their sponsorship with him.
How come?
It's funny when, Steve Smith and the like, fucking woke brands falling over each other to, pull their sponsorship from him. Yeah. This bloke's just done, what the ICC has deemed as a grievous offence and not
gone the other way.
Well, it's funny because telcos seem to be jumping on board, because obviously Vodafone did the stuff with Steve Smith, did the ad. Now Huawei with Shakib Al Hassan.
I think they're trying to get into the Bitcoin business, and maybe Shakib can give them an in.
You can,
into what's going
you can make paperless Bitcoin transactions on the new Huawei smartphone.
And that's why we're proud to be sponsored by Huawei.
Who are definitely listening to this right now.
Yeah, there's definitely no intelligence issues there.
Now my iPhone's listening into all the conversations we're having. Rohit Sharma is captain of this Indian side during the T20 series. Kohli's not playing. And India and Bangladesh are playing a two-test series after this. And one of them is a day-night test match in Calcutta they're going to play. So nice to see India catching up to the year 2014 as well. Any other takeaways from Shakib Al Hassan? I reckon it'd be interesting if that would happen in grade cricket. Obviously, it never would because there's no gambling markets in grade cricket. But how many people would fall over in club cricket if it's like a bookmaker approach and just be like, mate, just chuck this or flick a couple $100.
Many. I think.
Well, again, we predicted it in the second book, T and No Sympathy, in the first chapter.
Mm.
So
Yep. People said that was far-fetched.
Yeah.
Including the publisher. All right, WBBL, Elisa Healy and Elise Perry posted the highest ever partnership in WBBL history, hitting 199 not out for the Sixers against the Stars. Healy 106 not out of 53, Perry 87 off a pretty slow 68 balls. I don't know why I'm not surprised by this. Is it because they're the best players who have ever played the sport?
I kind of like it. I like front-loading your innings just the fucking best players and making the opposition look hapless. Like, who's going to open the batting? How about Healy and Perry, the two best players in the code by a long way at the moment, and making the bowlers look incredibly hapless on the whacker.
Mm.
I was watching highlights of this last night, and I'm sure there is good reason for it, but I'm very, very reluctant to, sneer at women's cricket. I find bowling in hats difficult to deal with.
Yep.
I'm sure there is a good reason from a hair perspective, said as a bald man. If someone could explain why this happens, maybe it's just sun smart, as women do tend to be more sensible than men. That's actually provable in health statistics. Mm. But bowling in hats, come on.
I don't know.
Because it's a social thing.
There are hairbands available. But is that thing just like when you go to training, you're given a cap? Training, you bowl with the cap, and therefore you just do the thing.
Is it a fast over rates thing? Like, if you don't have to give your cap to the umpire,
and
or someone gives your cap to the umpire, and that can sometimes hold up a few seconds.
It's a workload issue. Apparently, the fine leg to min on is doing too many Ks.
That's why Pat Howard got fired.
Yeah. It does make sense. Like, why wouldn't you bowl in a cap? You literally just save your skin. It's just skincare, frankly. Does it get in the way? No, I mean, it shouldn't. It's just one of these, another one of these social conventions that have no explanation that I'm happening to
stand
I
think
by.
It's because people have seen footage of Clary Crimmett bowling.
Yeah.
And it looks fucking village.
Mitchell Santner in the New Zealand England game, he was wearing a bucket hat. He's been wearing that in the field recently. He was asked about it. He just said, it's just sun smart.
Yeah.
So yeah. I love the Sixers though. You're right. It's absolute Fisher and Paykel front loader. Just get the best two players up the top.
That's a fucking under 13s reps. Yeah. Oh, more leaves than a tree. Yeah. This bloke.
More dots than a Dalmatian.
Oh my God.
Swinging like a rusty gate.
Oh, yeah.
Swinging like a jazz band.
Mm. Pizza Hut special delivery.
Never heard that before.
Cut the spit.
Got to give the people what they want. All right, Pete Hanscom is on the show. We should talk to Pete. And after that, your questions. Hashtag ask the news.
They know the importance of this delivery. Yasir Shah, his last ball of the series. Got him! Why did he do that? Unbelievable! Yasir Shah wins the match, wins the series for the first time for Pakistan.
Okay, boys. Some numbers here. 16 tests, 2 tons, 450s, 22 ODIs, a ton there, 450s, 105 first-class games, nearly 6,500 runs, 14 tons, 36 50s there. Played for Australia in all formats, has won numerous shields. I'm advised that as a Victorian, he doesn't have an AFL team, which is probably extremely healthy. I'm talking about Pete Hanscom. Pete, welcome to the Grade Cricketer.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
let's kick off with Grade Cricket. Pete, you're a St Kilda boy. Could you just tell us about life at St Kilda Cricket Club, your early forays into Grade Cricket, Premier Cricket, as it's called down there, and actually everywhere else. What are your early memories?
Yeah, early memories of Grade Cricket. 17-year-old, just coming into the system. First game was for the twos against Melbourne, so St Kilda and Melbourne, quite a big rivalry there. So a little bit of pressure on the line, and I'd never really seen much like it before. But there was a bit of banter being thrown from the sidelines to the blokes on the field, and it was quite a heated game to kickstart the district career.
So were you not prepared for that? Because I think I read that you had been playing against men, like fully formed men, since the age of about 13 in the Q subbies competition. So is there a big leap between Q and St Kilda?
Well, I mean, I did get threatened, I think, when I was 16 to go out to the car park after the game. Against one of the opposition players, but politely declined that offer and moved on. But
so that was it. Yeah, no more questions. Yeah, just politely declined the invitation.
No,
and
thank you.
I'll see you next week.
Well, yeah, exactly right. We'll move on and see if we can get past this little altercation. Funnily enough, we did. So it worked out. Worked out for the better.
Beautiful.
It was just a step up. It was a bit. Obviously the competition's a bit better. The boys feel like there's more riding on it as well. Guys trying to push for ones and then, further their career. So it was, it was an entertaining first game.
So you play your first game in second grade, Pete. How long did you have to wait? How long did you have to do your apprenticeship in second grade before you got your chance in first grade? Sort of 1-2 weeks or before Christmas or what happened?
Funnily enough, my next game was in the ones.
Yeah.
just the one game. Same week. Just the
you just really bashed the door down, I presume, with runs.
Yeah, I mean, I came in at 3 for 9 for the twos and managed to put on a partnership with one of my mates. We put on about 90, so that sort of got us going. But, went up into the ones, played 4 games. Made 4 runs over the course of those 4 games and got quickly dropped back to the twos.
Okay. That's unusual. We were expecting you to just kind of list off your list of achievements until reaching Test cricket. So you have experienced some early failure and you're able to bounce back from it.
Mm. See, you got to learn early, mate. It's a big game of failures.
I mean, St Kilda is a pretty renowned club. It's a club of Shane Warne and obviously people we've spoken to like Bob Quiney and now Nick Maddinson's there as well. I mean, perhaps you were dropped back to twos because, as Bob says, he likes to turn up to the game just to have showers. and can you actually confirm that?
Yeah, Bobby's still turning up, even though he's not playing anymore. Just turns up right at the end of the day and jumps in the showers with the boys. So not sure what's going on there, but he's one of the great shower time boys, and it's it is good fun.
Does he bring his own shower products, or does he just use the kind of existing soaps that are lying around? I'm just interested if he's actually bringing anything to the table here.
No, he's bringing plenty. You know, he's got the shampoo and conditioner, even though he doesn't use it. You're always offering it to other people, and then the body wash. Body wash is key. You know, you've got a couple of different ones there. You know, you get that one with like a bit of cooling mint.
Yeah,
it's nice. Big in the UK, those ones.
Yeah,
it gives your body a nice little tingle. So shower time with Bobby's pretty entertaining.
Cool. This is how I spoke with the comms manager of Cricket Victoria before this interview, but we'd be discussing this.
He's doing the neck slitting
on the show.
Tinkles.
He then made the step up to Victoria. I mean, we do get a few kind of anonymous sources, you know, who like to brief us before interviews, and I understand that, life is just constantly dealing with people trying to alpha you in cricket, and I understand that for your first Shield game, they couldn't even spell your name right on the back of your shirt. Is that correct? Or is Bob Connie lying to me?
No, that's spot on. Not only did they spell my name wrong on my shirt, but then they also spelt it wrong on the scoreboard, but in a completely different manner. So they got me twice, which was, quite emasculating.
Mm. But then after that, I suppose, man, I mean, what most people are discussing at the moment, is Victoria Shield season. You know, it's been a tough season so far for you guys after having won, four out of the last five Shields, for the, particularly for the Melburnians who just love Victorian cricket, possibly more than Australian cricket. What are you saying to them around what you guys are doing at the moment?
Yeah, it has been a little bit of a shame the way we've started this season, both in the one-day comp and the Shield, but the beauty is we have a team of guys that are experienced, and they have won Shields. We've won the most recent one day comp as well. So we've got the guys there to do it. And at the moment, we're just not winning those crunch moments. So we'll turn it around. There'll be a game where we'll get our first win for the season, and then that'll kickstart us going, and we'll be flying after that.
Pete, former US President Barack Obama, that's how I start all my questions, he recently spoke out against cancel culture. So that's a phenomenon particularly in vogue with young leftists who are increasingly using social media to call for boycotts of prominent people for sharing unpopular opinions or some kind of problematic behaviour. You experienced your own kind of cancellation recently in regards to comments or how those comments were construed after the recent Victoria versus South Australia draw. Do you want to kind of, open up, I guess, on what it felt like to be cancelled on the internet, to hear people like Darren Lehman talk on now-defunct sports programs about, their opinions on that? And just, is cancel culture ruining society and Australian cricket in general?
Mate, serious question. Great stuff. It sucked a little bit, but... Mate, it's a public forum. If you're going to put your opinion out there, you've got to be ready to cop what comes back. So, it's perfectly fine for people to say what they wanted to say. If they wanted to have a conversation around what I meant by a couple of comments or whatever, they could have called or sent a text or found out. But everyone's entitled to their opinion. That's the beauty of all the social media.
What a few things struck me about that, notorious interview, Pete. One was just how expert all social media is on cricket now, and how keen they were just to let you know what should have been said or what should have been done or whatever. But the other thing that struck me was when I was watching you being interviewed, I thought I have been in the field in those situations before. Maybe not conceding 600, but you can create a narrative in the field with your teammates that the opposition are the bad guys, and you can do it all day and say, can you hurry up? This is taking too long. You're shit, blah, blah, blah. And I just got the impression that perhaps you were just still on the field a little bit when you gave that chat, because I can see how you can come to that conclusion in your head that, they needed to speed the game up because cricket, you're the good guys. The team that you're on is always the good team. Is
our team is always the worst bunch of blokes in the world.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, you, you, Yeah, spot on. Spot on there. I mean, the team you play for, regardless of the opposition, is always right.
Yeah.
The opposition's opinion is always wrong. That's kind of how the game goes. And yeah, unfortunately, you know, I took those views to the media instead of, you know, leaving it out on the field. As you should do. But I'll try not to make that happen again. But you know, you never know. In the moment, you sometimes get caught up.
Well, at least you've learned from your mistake now, Peter, and we can all move on. I think he goes as a question.
Yeah.
Peter, I was just going to ask you, like, we're coming into the time that we get every year where it's the Shield bash off, where, you know, 2, 3, 4 bats are going to play for one or two spots in the Test side. I just want to ask you there's obviously a fairly obvious answer of just like better players play Test cricket. But for instance, I'm just thinking like, you know, Chad Sayers took 8 for and 5 for, you know, in the same game. Wonderful bowler in Shield cricket, isn't particularly close to the Test team at the moment. You know, last summer, you know, you were facing Bumrah. I guess I'm trying to ask, like, how big a gap is it between Test cricket and Shield cricket in Australia? And you know, do you think the guys who are scoring runs at the moment, you know, are actually that close to succeeding in Test cricket?
Yeah, I actually think Shield cricket and Test cricket is very close, mate. I think you look around and look at some of the bowlers that are playing in terms of Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins, these guys when they come back, and then you see batters making runs against them. So, you know, it is very close, and players that are making runs or taking wickets should definitely be getting looked at, because, I mean, I've played first-class cricket around the world. I've seen what accounting system's like. I've seen some games in India, and I firmly believe, yeah, the Australian setup is strong, really, really strong. And if you're performing, then I think you're ready for that next stage.
Pete, you're on record as saying you just need to hit bulk runs to get back into the Test team. But recently we've discovered there are other ways of getting into teams. For example, being good around the group, such as Mitch Marsh apparently is. What other things besides runs do you believe could stand you in good stead with the national selectors, including the yet-to-be-announced new selector that was advertised on seek.com?
Well, obviously, I mean, there's a stop-standing one of a good rig and skin folds. Skin folds have really... They've almost superseded having a good cover drive now. If your skinnies are under 50, even if you can get them under 40, that's almost automatic selection. It's a really impressive. You know, it means your rig's on point. You've got you know, you've probably got some nice biceps, a decent chest, and a couple of good quads. So yeah, skin folds are the way forward.
And like, you know, on the same point, Pete, like, you've obviously gone through an evolution with your technique to the point where, like, it is quite conceivably, you know, an unconventional technique. Like, can you give an insight into what it's like trying to bat in a way that many people think or don't understand, or like don't think, you know, inverted commas, looks good, and having to deal with like some of those attitudes in Australia, for example? I mean, you must have had so many people come up and say, "Oh no, you've got to do it like this, mate," or whatever. I mean, it must be incredibly frustrating.
Why don't you get on the front dog?
The amount of times I've heard that, just get forward. You've just got to get forward.
Yeah.
But mate, you realise they're bowling 150k. Getting forward is not that easy.
Not only just get forward, but also bat, you know, 2 feet outside your crease and just take the bowling on. That's what you
Yeah, exactly. Really, really go hard at it. You know, none of this late hand stuff. Really, you know, push at it. Get out in front. That happens. But I think with any technique, people are going to get overanalyzed. And ultimately, a good technique is a technique that scores run. Doesn't matter how you look. Doesn't matter what you're doing. I mean, we saw George Bailey this week is looking, you know, even crazier than what he was before, but it's still awesome. It works for him, and he makes runs with it. So it's like, who really cares?
Just to like sort of follow up on that one, like, do you feel like at you know, at the, say, professional level or Shield level, like, attitudes are changing around that? Like, most of you guys kind of think, well, no, if it works for him, that's fine. Or is there still a few kind of, like, sub-cults of people who just still say, nah, it looks a bit yuck, therefore it's not good. I don't understand it, so it can't work. Like what is the scene like there at the moment?
Yeah, I think that scene's starting to leave the game a little bit. I think, obviously, with Steve Smith making the amount of runs that he does, with the technique that he's got and the positions that he gets himself into, I think everyone's starting to realise that there are so many different ways to score runs, and whatever's natural for your body is going to put you in the strongest position to make runs. So you got to try and do what's best for yourself.
Pete, I want to ask you that so many times during every club cricketer's career, you know, you're thinking constantly, I'm about to get out. You're always thinking that. And obviously, the sort of season just gone, you had a wonderful ODI tournament in Asia against Pakistan, did really, really well. And then you basically get dropped in to the semi-final, come in cold against England on a seeming wicket, and it looked really hard work. Can you be honest? Were you thinking, I'm about to get out almost every ball?
Well, when my front pad nearly got blown off first ball, there were a few doubts starting to creep into the mind after that, especially the boys that were bowling, and they had a bit of pace and they were moving the ball around. So yeah, those kind of thoughts don't just stay at a grade cricket level; they seem to make their way up to the next ones as well every now and then.
It strikes me that there are better times than others to make the Australian side. For example, like, you might be in a rare form last year, but you get dropped into a test side lacking Smith and Warner and against the best side in the world, and you think, oh, I'd prefer to be picked against Pakistan, New Zealand, frankly, you know, if I'm trying to make... I don't mean that as disrespectful to Pakistan, New Zealand. I'm sure they'll be good, and it's probably hard for you to say, but, you know, it strikes me that, like, you know, getting picked on a side to go and tour India... probably a little bit more difficult if you want to establish yourself, or, you know, to be dropped into a semi at the World Cup than, say, making runs now when there's a couple of batting spots open and thinking, gee, I might get a full summer here. I mean, are those the sorts of thoughts guys at your level have?
I guess you still want to make runs against the best teams in the world. Like, you want to be as best as you can, so you want to test yourself against the best opposition. But, you know, if you are selected and it's the fifth test team in the world or sixth test team and you kind of can ease your way in there, it definitely helps with your confidence and your headspace. But ultimately, at some stage, you're going to come up against the best, so you've got to be able to do it, you know, when that moment comes as well.
It's fair enough. It's a very diplomatic response, Pete. So, mate, we're wishing you all the best for the summer, and also to people on social media who think they know heaps about cricket or whatever. Like, just, you know, leave him alone. Like, you know, you're always the good guys on the field. But, yeah, all the best for the summer, mate, and thanks for being available for the cast.
No worries. Cheers, boys. Thanks for that.
Niall O'Brien. Niall, welcome to the Grad Cricketer.
My kind of biggest, my two memories of the show back to our playing for Mosman wasn't about cricket, really. It was about turning up for a 50 over game on a Sunday with a woman on each arm and a bat and a bucket of KFC. That was my abiding memory of the great Sean Actor. That is truth. I can picture him walking into Alabama Oval now, late for warm ups, with a woman on each arm and a bucket of KFC. I thought, wow. This lad's getting about 20 grand a game.
Okay, boys, the Great Australian Rig 11, hashtag Great Australian Rig 11, is nearing its completion.
Here we go.
And we've had some wonderful submissions. For those who are just tuning into this, we are putting together a new arrangement of custom Budgie Smugglers. The theme is Great Australian Rigs. It's part of Budgie Smugglers' Ordinary Rig campaign. We're celebrating rigs of all shapes and sizes. Any rig, doesn't matter. Could be athletic, could be sloppy as anything, but celebrate it.
Mm-hmm.
Love it, you know? We're all in this together.
Own it.
Own your rig. So we just, and some wonderful submissions are coming in. Want to throw a few out there just to get the grey matter going on this. Okay, he goes, you had one to kick off.
Well, I was reading the DMs the other day. Someone was suggesting Sean Tate's thighs and calves, which I hadn't noticed before. But now that I think of it, quite a good trunk.
Yeah.
Quite a good trunk. Then I was thinking, well, obviously Bruce Reid's neck.
What is it about
his neck that you so desire?
A longer neck. Now I think about it, I was talking about Gladstone Small's no neck. So I'm very fascinated by necks at the moment, apparently.
Okay. Did you go on that date, by the way, from last week?
Didn't go on the date. No, tomorrow you never contacted me.
Okay. Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Missed opportunity.
I mean, I'm a big hipman. Or small, lower back.
The hipman.
Mm. Yeah. The small of somebody's back. And I thought Adam Dale had a wonderful swivel through the crease.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'd imagine he had quite sort of lithe hips.
I imagine he'd be a very good...
They didn't lie.
No, he'd be a good salsa dancer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I said dancer, because apparently from South Australia.
Yeah. It's Penny Wong over here.
Speaking of, like, I know we focus on the lower body, I think. You just mentioned Sean Tate's calves and thighs.
Yeah.
What about toes? I'd like to see Ricky Ponting's tippy toes, because when you always saw him on the field, he was very much like a panther, just ready to go either way.
Cat-like,
always kind of on those toes. I'd like to see the toes. I'm not sure how you actually procure an image of Ricky Ponting's toes. Mm. Maybe Ricky could send them in.
Feet pics. Ask Ricky for feet pics.
It's basically what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
I like, I was watching Aaron Finch bat yesterday, just bombing Irfan and just chewing gum. So I want to say Aaron Finch's jaw is strong.
I'd like to see Aaron Finch's dimples.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you can isolate a dimple as a body part.
It's
I'm not sure if it qualifies.
It's masculine.
Is it part of a rig?
But it also is... you wouldn't traditionally say a dimple is part of a rig.
It's actually a muscular irregularity, a dimple.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Like a bum chin. One of those things.
Yeah. It's like a retardation of the cheek.
Right, okay.
I like Nathan Coulthard's general ruggedness. So I'm not going to isolate one area of his rig, but it's more of a rig look.
Yeah. So it's an overall package.
The rugged look.
Is that something we can do in post?
Possibly. Yeah. We touch up these.
There's some obvious ones. Watson's chest, Johnson's shoulders, glutes.
Obvious,
Johnson's glutes and Brett Lee's glutes, we've said before. Mm. Andrew Simons had nice elbows.
Yes, he did.
Whose face? Who's the face of this?
Yeah, well, that's the question we're putting
Maybe there is no face.
To the listeners. It is, use the hashtag Great Australian Rig 11, so XI. Great Australian Rig XI, we are going to have custom smugglers with all of these rig parts on them for your purchase and our purchase over Christmas, because this is all very, very normal. That's all for Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggler.com.au.
Hashtag AskTGC coming right up in just a moment's time, but you know what time it is right now. We're talking about our live shows, which start so very soon.
You know what time it is.
Brisbane. We are going to be at the Princess Theatre on the first night of the first test match after the day's play. It's the last day Australia won't be winning a test match this summer.
What a venue.
It's
an easy walk from the Gabba.
It's a brilliant venue, to be fair. Looked it up. Haven't been there before, but looked it up. It looks amazing. Tickets are still available for that. Jump online to greycricketer.club. The following week, we're going to be in Adelaide, Pez. That's just you and I. Dave will not be there, unfortunately. We're being flying over Channel 7, some Channel 7 stuff. So it's going to be Pez and I in Adelaide. Make that the biggest day of your life, the biggest Saturday of your life. We're going to be at the Rhino Room, greycricketer.club for all your ticketing needs. Obviously, Melbourne and Sydney as well. But Brisbane and Adelaide, get round us, because the time is coming up. Summer is but upon us. So, we'll see you there. They're good fun. Brody Poole writes in to hashtag AskTGC. He says, "G'day boys, I'm a year 12 student going through my exams at the moment, which rates a stress level somewhere between sitting under a lollipop ball at cover on an overcast day when there's no sun to blame and facing your first ball against a 14-year-old leggy who has already taken a four from your village team. Mm-hmm. I was sitting around the breakfast table this morning with my family, mum, dad and my sister. I looked down to see a notification from my dad on my phone, even though he sits less than 2 metres from me. I checked the message to see that he has sent me an attached photo of the newspaper clippings of his 105 not out he hit for his local team Stanhope in the 1986-87 season. Normal stuff. Accompanying this was another clipping of an 8 for 73 he took in 1985-86, including 5 caution bowls. And just when I thought this strange exchange of prowess was over, he sent me his career stats, batting average 15.07. I was understandably confused, but before I could formulate a response, I hear an utterance from across the table. What do you think of that, champ? Champ, a word of which cricketing connotations he only learned about because I told him about this podcast. I was strangely proud that my dad made an attempt to use a more modern lexicon, but perplexed by he would attempt to alpha me in such a way. I guess my question is this: how can I tell my dad that his stats don't matter to me when really they completely and utterly make me feel inferior in every way?
P.S. To give context, my best bowling is 4 for 35 and batting 54. I did, however, make it to year 12, something he never got to. Not that this means anything considering cricket ability defines us as people. Great question, Brody.
That's some nice good levels from a good year levels. 12 student.
From yeah. 17, 18 year old.
The first thing that struck me was, you know, be grateful for your family sitting around the breakfast table. That's a wonderful ritual.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so your dad deserves some credit for that. Yeah. I think. And then I think your dad offering you while he's sitting across the table is pretty good too.
Not talking to you. No eye contact.
And I just wonder if he'd mentioned these results before or if this was the first time Brody had learned about his results. Oh, like, you know, his best scores and stuff like that. I think that's a pretty good way. It's pretty hard to come back from that as a child. I like that Brody knows that there are other areas he can call upon to defeat his dad in the social capital wars that we're all engaged in with our fathers. Mm-hmm. But he knows that also it's only cricket. Cricket is the only hill that he will battle on. Mm. and so he's in trouble.
I mean, what's his comeback? I mean, the only comeback I can kind of think of, well, firstly, anything that happened before 1990 doesn't really stack up in terms of the modern game. So it's just obviously village. It's like 1980s rugby under Alan Jones, fucking walking around in school teacher shorts. But there's nothing professional about that. So.
No, there was nothing
and also, professional about that. Your dad's got fucking newspaper clippings.
Yeah.
That's pretty beta.
A photo of newspaper clippings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sure, he's trying to...
He's got digitized, his newspaper clippings.
So it wouldn't have the impact if he'd just shown him your clippings, because that would be a nice bonding moment between father and son.
Get a scrapbook.
I've treasured a scrapbook of my cricketing memories. Yeah. But he's just fucking got an iPhone, screenshotted it, and just capped it off with a little champing.
Yeah.
I appreciate the dad's effort to modernize his...
Yeah, it's good.
His lexicon.
My dad's taken photos of the TV, which he's printed out when I've been on TV. Like, he's watching me and he's taken a photo of the television of me on the television.
Yeah. Nice. And printed it in black and white on his Konica printer.
Yeah, and then sent it as a letter.
To whom it may concern.
To all his relatives. And we arrived 3 weeks later.
So, Brody, the answer is trouble.
Yeah, a lot of trouble there.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Mm. Okay. Angus McDonald writes in, "Dear fellas, I've recently had my 18th birthday, and as a long-term fan of TGC, my mum bought me two of your stubby holders. My question is, will showing the boys my TGC stubby holders gain me social capital, despite the gift being from my mum? And also, who's the real alpha? My mum saying those are the piss take present. This is a piss take present, or is it Glenn Maxwell calling a run out from 60 fucking meters away on live television?" Who's the
that was one? Alpha? Do you know what he's talking about? The Maxwell thing.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, that was good. But I'm going to go with mum alphaing us. Although, been on the website greatcricket.club.
And while you're there, grab a 4-pack. Two fucking individual stubby holders. Yeah.
The real alpha is capitalism, really.
It's
very Australian, isn't it? And obviously not gender specific to, like, you know, we experience this all the time, to have support from people who must manifest that support by abusing us or criticising us or sledging us in some kind of way. You had an experience with that over the weekend. You guys have people sliding into your DMs?
Yeah, people sliding into your DMs and then say something weird to you. Then, like, you say, you just reply back, knowing, just acknowledging that you've seen the message, and they'll be like, "Oh, no, I'm a fan."
Yeah.
Oh, I had too many drinks last night. I apologized profusely for what I said. I never thought or dreamed that you would respond to me, Ian Higgins.
Why does this keep happening all the time? It's like every week.
That's because it's Australian men.
Angus, thanks for dipping in. Showing subway holders will give you social capital. It's a conversation starter. It's a conversation piece. It's what it is. Hmm. Yeah.
So. I've been using it around my house just as a conversation piece with my wife.
Are you still doing that?
That's the first time I've called her my wife.
How does it feel?
A bit strange. Oh, yeah, a bit weird, actually.
Just on that, by the way, we do have a colleague of ours, or an old teammate of ours, who, and we will post this with his permission, but who we talked about gender reveal births, gender reveal parties recently, and he's posted on Facebook a gender reveal party that manifested in him dressed in full whites with batting equipment and a helmet of the club that we played in, I played at. And his wife or partner had lobbed a ball above him.
Underarm
had his head, though. And upon hitting the ball, hooking it wildly, it revealed a puff of pink dust, and he was having a girl. And as he posted it on Facebook, the caption was, "Don't bowl there, champ."
We'd like to announce
the still shot of him playing a wonderful hook shot and a puff of pink dust. I mean,
was the second image just an ultrasound?
Yeah.
I would have gone for the caption of, like, didn't even get it.
Yeah.
You can edit posts on Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay, this final one, speaking of Australian men, comes from Josh Helliwell, who says, ask TGC, hi, blokes, I see myself as a good family man, a man that will always put my kids first. I've held the resistance to play cricket over the last two summers because of my injuries and having a son, but have definitely not stopped the shadow batting slash bowling in the living room and scoring 3 for 743 and getting out the next 20 wickets for a total of 50 on Don Bradman 2 on the PlayStation. I had the cricket on this afternoon while doing some things around the house and saw the score. My one-year-old son was there watching it. He was just staring blankly at the screen, mate. He wasn't watching it. And
he can't see shapes yet.
I thought to myself, I'll change it to the kids' channel, and I listened to the cricket on the radio where I was working in the house. As I switched it over, thinking I was dad of the year, he then began crying and chucking a tantrum. As I switched it back to the cricket, he calmed right down and sat and watched the cricket again. As this happened, I saw what his future had in store for him. The years of Saturdays surrounded by blokes in the showers, the sledges, the injuries, in inverted commas, preventing him playing for Australia, the many, many ducks and or 30 runs conceded off and over, just being drawn back year after year. And for what? Another disappointing season of grade cricket? Everything that had me have, I don't know what he's trying to say here. I'll just leave that sentence alone. Should I stop this behaviour before it gets out of hand? Is it just too late? Am I just a terrible father for allowing this to happen? I need your help. Hashtag AskTGC. What do you think? Just an aside while I was reading that. What do you think Bradman would think of Don Bradman on PlayStation?
He'd want to get his cut.
He would, wouldn't he? Very acquisitive.
Yeah. There's a great on the Batuta cast. They interviewed Gary Sweet the other day, who played Bradman in the famous Bodyline movie. And Bradman stopped. Gary Sweet met Bradman before they filmed or during the filming of the show, and met Lady Bradman, who was lovely, etc. And then he'd bump into Bradman at Adelaide Oval because he was from there the cricket in the subsequent years, and Bradman completely brushed him. And he's like, I don't know what I've done. Goes up to Lady Bradman. You should listen to the podcast, but goes up to Lady Bradman and goes, oh, I don't know what I've done. He's like, oh, you know what he's like. He's like, what have I done? And she said, well, it was because you appeared with a beer in the movie and he never drank. He never drank.
Never drank.
And when he's not talking to me forever because of that, well, you know what he's like? It's dramatic license.
He was a good bloke, Bradman, wasn't he? Got around the boys.
Good player.
Yeah, good stick. Yeah. Good stick.
So, what advice do we pass on? I mean, you're right, Piers. He's 1 year old, this boy. I mean, kids only form explicit memories from the age of two onwards. So, you know, if it happens a year from now, write in and let us know. But for now, just chill out.
I've got to say, you know, like the ultimate dream is to play cricket for Australia. You know, like 99.99% chance it will end in the sort of disappointment that Josh Helliwell describes here.
99.94.
Pardon me. It's autistic. I heard a story the other day of a guy that played 3 tests for Australia in the late 70s, early 80s. And apparently, like, his wife gives him a lot of grief for coming home late still and drinking too much and whatever. And apparently what he does is he comes home.
What does Rodney Hogg do?
No, this isn't Rodney Hogg. Oh, okay. This isn't Rodney Hogg. Apparently when his wife gives him grief and he's like drunk and stuff, he goes up. This is a story I'm told. He goes upstairs, gets completely nude, walks downstairs with just one item. And as his wife gives him grief, he puts on his baggy green cap and he says, how many fucking tests have you played?
Why in my head is that Brendan Julian?
It's not.
Yeah, I know. 70s and 80s, but that's good. I mean, you guys are the dads here. I don't know how to answer Josh's question. He's just trying to share the experience of cricketing. It's, you know, the sound of the summer. The sound of summer that cricket has been for so many people. All these people.
That it calms him. Cricket is background noise. It's background noise. That's how you sell the game. That's how you grow the game. That's how you sell it to the masses who don't like it. It's like, just enjoy the background noise, which is a message to also the commentators and the broadcasters. Stop trying to make cricket cool. Stop trying to make it sexy. It's an antidote to the pace and colour and like a sound, like loudness of life.
Do you think there's a niche in the market or an opportunity in the market for an animation company to produce a child's cricket program or at least drip feed some cricket related content into existing Australian productions such as Bluey?
I believe so. There's a Bluey, but for cricket. What's the message in it or the moral? Is it to play or not to play?
Well, that's the question, depending on who's funding the production.
That should be the name of the show, to play or not to play.
Joe Wilson, I'm going to finish this last one up here, lads. Joe Wilson, he says, hey, guys, huge fan. Dad turned 50 today. This actually came in a while ago, October 6th. Dad turned 50 today, and he loves your work. Also loves cricket more than he loves mum. He's been playing winter cricket in the 16th grade. There's 16 grades. He's bumped his average to 15. Pretty good for him. He's been making a good-looking 58, 45, and he's been coming to all my games. Also my brother's. Fuck knows if we'll go to one of his. If you give him a shout-out or something, that would make his day. Thanks. By the way, his name's Pete. Well, absolutely no way we're going to give Pete Wilson a happy 50th birthday, are we? There's no way we're doing that. Is that fair to say?
Wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah, cool. Cool. No dramas. All right. Thanks to Pete Hanscom for coming on the show. We'll see you next week on the Great Cricketer Podcast.
Happy birthday, Pete.
Hanscom.